Cross-sectional survey is one of the most common research designs. Let's take a look at an example article that applies cross-sectional survey. The example article is written by Baron and Tang. It's titled Entrepreneurs' Social Skills and New Venture Performance, Mediating Mechanism and Cultural Generality. The study is published in Journal of Management, which is one of the top journals in the field of management. The topic belongs to entrepreneurship, but this is a general journal, so they publish pretty much anything related to management, as long as it's of high quality. The study is a survey, and it's a cross-sectional survey. Survey study is something where you ask people to provide you data. So you would ask people questions, either in an online form or a paper form, or you can call the people. Typically, survey questions are something like statements, where you rate them from 1 to 5 or 1 to 7, or they might be open questions. Surveys come in a couple different forms. Cross-sectional survey means that you do one survey, and longitudinal survey means that you do multiple surveys, for example, one per year, and then you link the data so that you can follow the respondents over time. Cross-sectional survey is more common because it's a lot less expensive to implement than a longitudinal survey. The paper studies the effects of entrepreneurs' social skills, and there are various different social skills that they study. Then they hypothesize that those social skills affect the venture's resource acquisition and information acquisition performance, and those resource acquisition and information acquisition then affect company performance or company growth, which is measured through a growth in revenue and growth in profits and growth in performance. Then they repeat the study in a couple of different countries to test if it generalizes across cultures. So that is the study in a nutshell. And let's take a look at how this positions within the frameworks we have covered thus far. And this is a theory testing study. So they present theory first, and then they present a statistical test of that theory. In the paradigmatic framework, this belongs to the functionalist paradigm. So they assume that the world is real and independent of observation, instead of studying, for example, people's perceptions, which an interpretive study would do. This is a survey study because they ask people to provide data. They don't do observations like we would do field research. They don't manipulate like we would do an experiment. And they don't use data collected by somebody else that we would do in our cover research. The study is focused on causality, and they apply the statistical modeling strategy. Let's take a look at the study in a bit more detail now. So this is a deductive study. The idea of deductive study is that you first present a theory. We have here, and the theory here is about specific social skills. And the social skill that they are talking about is social perception, which they define as person's ability to sense or perceive how others are affected in a social situation. And then they have a theory of why that might affect entrepreneur's performance. And from that theory, they derive a hypothesis. The idea is that if this theory is correct, then this statistical hypothesis should hold. Entrepreneurs' social skills at social perception accuracy in perceiving others is positively related to financial performance of new ventures. So that is their hypothesis that they're using to test this theory that they present. The overall idea of the hyperdeductive method is that you start with a theory or a theoretical hypothesis, and then you derive an observable consequence. And then we say that if this theory and some auxiliary hypothesis, like for example, our data are not biased in any way, we have valid measures of social perception and financial performance, and so on. If all these hypotheses hold, then we should observe what the statistical hypothesis says. If we observe the statistical hypothesis, then, or if we don't observe the statistical hypothesis, then we conclude that the original theoretical hypothesis, this theory here, is incorrect. And if we observe support for the statistical hypothesis, we conclude that theory could be correct. We can never say that the theory is proven because there are various different other reasons that might lead to a positive correlation besides this data. But we say that these data support the theory if this statistical hypothesis is supported by the data. But we can never prove it. So it might be receive support for some other reason as well. The data come from a cross-sectional survey of 129 entrepreneurs in China. And this is postal mail, so it's paper-based surveillance of electronic. And they measure these four different social skills using validated self-reported scales. That means that there is a set of questions that together are trying to measure each of these dimensions, like social perception. They might have four different statements, and then the entrepreneur rates the statements between one completely disagree and seven completely agree. And then based on those responses to, let's say, four questions, the researcher then calculates one score for that entrepreneur that quantifies that entrepreneur's social perception skills. The dependent variables are sales growth, profit growth, and employment growth, and they just ask for numbers. And then they measure mediation models or mediating variables. The idea is that the effect of these social skills is not direct, but it goes through resource acquisition and information acquisition that are measured similarly to these other, so they are rating scales between 1 and 7. Then they have control variables for ruling out alternate explanations. They use regression analysis, and then there is additional analysis for moderation that I will not go into in detail in this talk. So our book says that the main preoccupations of quantitative researchers start with measurement and causality. Both of these aspects are present in this paper. Let's look at measurement first. So the idea of measurement is, how do we precisely quantify the attributes that of interest? And I'm focusing on social perception in this talk. When you read this kind of a survey study, you typically find a rather lengthy measure section. And this measure section explains what was included in the survey form, what questions were asked in the paper-based survey, and how they were asked. And they say that they use this 7-point Likert type scale. So that's the agreement scale: one completely disagree, seven completely agree, and so on. Importantly, you need to justify, like, where do these questions come from? And typically they come from prior research, because developing good survey questions and showing that they work is a lot of work. And for that reason, researchers prefer to use existing scales. And they say here that the social skills were measured using questions taken from prior research. That's very common, and that's a recommended practice. Then beyond reporting where your questions come from, you need to demonstrate reliability and validity. And we demonstrate validity with something called a factor analysis. And they explain factor analysis here. You don't have to understand the details, but this factor analysis table is typically the table one, the first table in a survey study, because you first need to demonstrate validity and reliability before you can do anything else with your data. And what factor analysis does is that it groups the variables into certain dimensions. And here, factor analysis found five different dimensions in the data. And it says that these social perception items strongly belong to the second dimension. So the dimension order is arbitrary, but they belong to the second dimension, and they don't belong to any other dimension. So we can see that these other variables on these rows are close to zero. So we say that these five variables that measure social perception only belong to this one factor. Then we look at if any other variables belong to this factor, and these values are pretty low. So we would conclude that these items, these questions, have something in common that no other question has. And then we conclude that that something in common is that they measure the same thing. And this is interpreted as evidence of measurement validity in quantitative studies. So you look at every item. Every question loads just on one factor, and the factor loading should be above 0.7. This is a pretty low, but most are more than 0.7. Then we also have reliability statistics. This is coefficient alpha, sometimes called Cronbach's alpha. And it's commonly found in this table. And the commonly used cutoff rule of thumb is 0.7, and these are in the 0.8 ballpark. So reliability seems pretty good. So based on this table, we will conclude that these survey questions are reliable and valid measures of whatever they are supposed to measure. Then they explain the measurement of the dependent variable, so growth, they're just asking growth rate, profit rate, and employee growth rate using questions. So this is the measurement part. It's perhaps the longest part in the methods section in this kind of a survey-based paper, because justifying why the questions measure what they're supposed to measure is it's quite hard. Then there's causality. And causality in observation studies can be addressed by using control variables or statistical modeling. There are other strategies, but statistical modeling with controls is the most simplest thing. Let's take a look at how they deal with these three conditions. The first condition is association, and let's focus on social perception. We would check association from a correlation table. So table number two is the correlation table, and you should always look at this table first when you look at the quantitative study that presents one, which is pretty much all non-experimental studies, they present this correlation table. And we can see that social perception is on row number seven, and this is column number seven corresponds to that row. We can see that the dependent variable, sales growth, profit growth, is statistically significantly associated with social perception, but employment growth is not. So we would say that association is supported for these two growth variables, but not the third one. We can also look at association in the regression table, but this is a lot easier table to interpret. Then, condition two, direction of effect. And this article actually doesn't take direction of effect into account because it's a cross-sectional study. Everything is measured at the same time point, so they can't say whether social skills become before resources or resources become before social skills and so on, and or profits, whether growth becomes before resources or resources are affecting growth. And they present it as a limitation, and that's fair. Cross-sectional studies cannot empirically determine which of two variables is cause, which one is effect. Then condition number three, rival explanation. This is a pretty weak handling of rival explanations, but the idea is that you present alternative variables whose influence you try to control. The idea might be that, for example, smaller companies can grow more because growth is relative, and if your starting point is small, then it's easy to grow than if you are a large company. Smaller companies grow faster than larger ones. And also it might be possible that entrepreneurs in smaller companies have more better social skills. Then we would have a spurious correlation because company size affects both social skills and growth, and we might incorrectly conclude that there's a causal effect if we don't control for size. So they just list the controls without justifying, which is not ideal. Then the main hypothesis testing is here, these regression tables. So they run six different regression models, and I'm just focusing on one specific path, causal pathway, just for simplicity. So let's take a look at this causal pathway. They say that expressiveness leads to resource acquisition, leads to employment growth rate. So how do they test this chain, this mediation, this chain of causality? First, they have to demonstrate that expressiveness affects employee growth rate. So we would look at, okay, so here's a model with employment growth rate as the dependent variable, and here is expressiveness affecting employment growth rate. Importantly, we don't here have the mediator here, resource acquisition, yet, but this is just an overall effect if expressiveness affects growth. Then we want to know if expressiveness affects resource acquisition. We can look at the resource acquisition model, and we can see that expressiveness indeed has an effect. It is statistically significant. It affects resource acquisition. And then we look at whether expressiveness affects or resource acquisition affects growth rate. So that's the final model. Indeed, it does. This is statistically significant. And we also look at if expressiveness affects growth rate after we control for resource acquisition, and it doesn't. And that establishes that expressiveness, resource acquisition, is one of the mechanisms through which expressiveness affects company growth rate. So this is in a nutshell what a survey paper looks like. There are three important tables always in a survey paper. There is the factor analysis table, which presents evidence of reliability and validity of measurements. Then there's correlation table that you should check always. Do the variables that are supposed to explain something correlate with the variables that, that they should explain? And then there's regression table, like this table 3, which contains the main hypothesis testing.